Hey everyone, welcome to the Full Armor of God podcast on the Revelations Radio Network. You can get to this podcast in a lot of different ways. You can subscribe to the Revelations Radio Network feed on iTunes or the Full Armor of God feed on iTunes. Or you can go to the website, which is thefullarmorofgod.podomatic.com. That's P-O-D-O-M-A-T-I-C, podomatic.com. So we're happy to have you here. This is changing formats once again. It started off with just a lot of different things. I used to do verse by verse teaching through it, and then just random talking about things that pertain to the Bible, and just sort of sermonettes and things like that. And then I shifted it to mostly plain sermons, and that's something that I really like to do because I listen to a lot of different sermons, and every once in a while I will be blessed or find some new thing out, and so it's just a way for me to sort of let other people hear the things that I'm doing, because maybe other people don't listen to quite as much and, you know, sift through quite as much as I do. So it's just a way to present the things that I think are really, really edifying and really good. So that's pretty much the new format. I'm going to do a little bit more talking and an introduction to the clip, as well as, you know, any commentary on it that I think may be necessary. But in this particular episode, it's going to be a really short episode because the clip that I have is only 15 minutes long. That's because it was recorded at a church service where a missionary came up and spoke about the work that he was doing. The missionary works with the Wycliffe Bible translators. If you don't know anything about Wycliffe, they're a really big agency that translates the Bible into the languages of the world that do not yet have a Bible in their language. So there are, and actually, like, I can't remember what the numbers are, but it's like in the thousands of languages that still don't have the Bible. And when they go into a town, you know, it, as you can imagine, it takes years sometimes to get a Bible finished in their language. And so during that time, there's a lot of other things that they do. They just love on the people, medical treatment centers and these types of things, you know, where they, I just watched a video not too long ago of this this young girl who was there, and she just, you know, was just as busy as anybody could be, you know, from sun up to sundown, just treating different things and, you know, helping with, you know, birthing babies and everything in between. And that's just what they do. They sort of help people and show them that they love them. And, you know, by the time the Bible gets out, you know, well, the idea is that people would be, have their hearts prepared for the gospel. So without any further ado, here is this audio. Hope you enjoy it. Bye.
Martin Nauber met he and his wife and family. I think the first time I met you guys, Martin, was at the beach baptism not long ago, if I remember right. And we talked for a while. And they're doing ministry with Wycliffe, and I just was forwarded an email by our missions pastor, Art Dykstra, about what God is doing in Papua New Guinea, I believe if that's correct. And Martin's just going to come share a little bit, and we may have him come back later another time and share a little more because it's just exciting. Would you welcome Martin Nauber?
Well, thank you for letting me share tonight. As Danny already said, my name is Martin. My wife's name is Beata. Unfortunately, she can't be here tonight. She's at a conference somewhere else. We have four kids, and we've been working as Bible translators in Papua New Guinea since 1988. That's when we went there for the first time. And I just came back from a trip to Papua New Guinea yesterday afternoon. And I had written to my wife what God was doing there. And somehow she forwarded that to Art, who forwarded it to Danny, and now I'm here sharing with you what I wrote to my wife. But before I do, I just want to give a little bit of background so you have the right setting of so you know where to put all this. We work for a people called the Dawala. And there's about 3,000 speakers of those in the southern mountains of Papua New Guinea. It's a very, very remote place. You can only get there by helicopter. And it's very undeveloped. It's basically, in many ways, it's still Stone Age, the way that people live there. And they've met the first white people just 30 years ago, some of them 40 years ago, The older folks, they still remember the days of cannibalism, and we still have caves filled with skulls in our area. We got pictures of that that we show when we do our slideshows around churches. And these people, they were missionized, I want to say. Not evangelized, but Christianized, so to speak. In the old days, the way the missions did this was that a church came in and they would land at the coast, and whatever language was spoken at that in that area, that's what they would learn, and then they would build a mission center and go and try to preach to the interior country with that language that they learned at the coast. So that language was elevated to a so-called church language, and it became the church language throughout the area. Problem is, people in the interior, they don't speak that language. And church services, the experience for them is much like it was in Europe a few hundred years ago when everything was in Latin. Then common people didn't understand either what was going on. Well, these people, they sense that there's something special with this church and with this message that's going on, and they wanted to understand it better. So we were in the very fortunate situation that we were invited by those people to come and translate the Bible into their language so that they would know and understand it better. And until then, they're animists. That means they worship bush spirits and ancestor spirits. And then they had a very weird way, a weird version of the gospel. It's called the cargo cult. And it's widely spread in Melanesia. And I think I can have time to tell the short story to say how it goes. The cargo cult is a misunderstood gospel mixed up with Melanesian legends and mythology. And what it basically says is Jesus Christ was born in Papua New Guinea at a place called Bethlehem, but that's just a cover name for the real place, which is a village in Papua New Guinea. He grew up, he did a lot of good things. He helped people, he healed them, and he gave them food. But one day he was killed by accident, and then he went underground for 3 days. And he was traveling underground. Don't ask me how, but that's how the story goes. And from time to time, he would poke out his head out of the ground and look around to see if his enemies were still there or if the air is clear. Well, if it wasn't good to come up, he went down again and did some more traveling. But everywhere where he poked up his head, that's where today we have the springs. So the living water is what comes from that. After 3 days, he rose again, and he was piping mad at the people for killing him for no reason. So he deserted them, and he went to a place called Paradise. And Paradise is the world of the white man, which is, it's America, Europe, Australia, and New Zealand. And it's all one place in their minds. It's one local physical place. And so he went to Paradise, and there he gave the people the good news, the gospel, which is how to get cargo. And so it follows that nowadays all the white people, we have all the nice stuff, like cars and planes and TVs and whatnot, and the Papua New Guineans have nothing. But one day Jesus Christ will come back in power and glory and give them a lot of cargo. So that was the cargo cult. Anyways, so we were invited to come there to straighten that out and translate the Bible. And we had an incredible introduction the very first night. And I got to tell you, when you go there in a place like that, it's kind of scary because the helicopter drops you off and it leaves and you have absolutely no contact to the outside world except there's a two-way radio. But if anything happens, something goes wrong and you want to call for help, well, you're lucky if the chopper comes back in a day or two to get you. So we didn't speak the language, we knew nothing, and the culture was very strange and weird. And the very first morning, the witch doctor, the main witch doctor, they have several, they have a hierarchy there, and the big guy, he showed up on our doorstep. We had a little bush hut, grass hut where we lived in, and he could speak a little bit of English. So I was quite surprised. And he had two apostles with him, he called them. And he said, he's here to test me with a bush knife. A bush knife is a machete, about that long. And I said, well, I'd rather forgo the testing. But he insisted, and I didn't know what to do. So he started acting very strange and wielding the bush knife, always sort of pretending to hit me, or I don't know if he really tried and he just didn't, but I prayed and he started yelling in a language, and I said, what's going on? And he says, well, the invisible man is going to wield the bush knife and he's going to test you. And I say, what do you mean, invisible man? He says, well, I have an invisible man with me all the time. He helps me to do my magic, and he will wield the bush knife, and he will talk to you. So it occurred to me this was some kind of demon possession. And at that moment, I said, I don't know, it just came to me to say, oh, that's interesting. I have an invisible man, too. He's right next to me all the time, and he helps me, too. His name's Jesus Christ, the Lord of the universe. And when I said that, something amazing happened. It's just the same story as in the gospel when Jesus said, it's me, and they fell back. The guy fell over. He was like pushed back, and he stumbled and started yelling at the top of his lungs. And I called him back, and I said, what are you saying? And he said, I don't know. The invisible man said that. And so he started his test, wielding this bush knife at me. And after a while, he stopped, and he came up to me and said, okay, I know now. I have to call you my Lord. And then he disappeared. And I don't know if he said that to me or if he said that to the Lord who was with me, but that's what he said. And then he went away. And the people witnessed that, and they were extremely impressed. They thought something's different with us, that this guy reacted to us in such a way. And anyway, so we started translating the Bible, and they were very helpful from the beginning. And the cargo cult, as we translated, I didn't go preaching every day, but just as we translated, the people woke up and said, wow, the cargo cult's not right. I said, yeah, you got it. And and it completely disappeared in our area. Well, it's still around on the outskirts, but in our village and neighboring village, it's completely gone. And when we dedicated the New Testament a couple of years ago, I forgot to look at the clock when I started. So, but I'll be done in a minute. I think it was 14 or so. Where was I? Yeah, New Testament. So when we dedicate the New Testament, lots of things happened. The Lord showed his power in many different ways in those years that we've been there. And I could go on telling story after story like that of what the Lord has done. And also, he opened my eyes to seeing things different ways, the ways we never thought of before theologically, because it just doesn't cross our mind here in the West. So, but maybe I can tell those things another time. But when we had the dedication, there were representatives from each village, from the witch doctors, and they all came forward and they said, on this day, we want to start something newer in our life. We want to have that God of power in our life who gives us reason to live, and we want to get rid of all this magic and this worshiping of spirits. And they brought all their magical items, not books, but it reminded me of the story in Acts, in Acts 19, where they burned all those books. And they burned their stuff that they used to do witchcraft and sorcery on an altar and publicly announced that now they're going to follow Christ only. And that was amazing. It was a surreal moment for us, and we were really, yeah. So, and I'll get to what I wrote my wife shortly. But one of the reasons, I often ask myself, why are the Dawas so accepting of God, and why are they so open? Because we've been doing ministry and evangelism all our life. I mean, my wife and I, we started back when we were teenagers. We were out on the streets doing street evangelism, and we smuggled Bibles into Russia and all those things. I said that we're from Europe, right? I did, yeah. So we did that over there, and we often ran against some kind of blockage, and often had the impression people aren't interested, and they couldn't care less of what we had to say. And I found out that people aren't ready necessarily to receive the gospel. We were telling them Jesus loves them, but that doesn't matter. They say, "Well, so does my dog," and it doesn't mean much. Yeah, if you hang the gospel somehow in a vacuum, it doesn't mean much. They have to know why the gospel is there and what it frees them from and what it opens, what possibilities it opens to them. Well, the Dawas had that, And that's why they were so receptive. And it came when we started to translate the word for God. God is always a critical word in translation because you never know what are you going to use. Going to use the English word or some of the local words? Well, we had a local word that we used, and it came from a legend. And the legend goes like this. In the beginning, there was Mamai Tsua. Mamai Tsua is a compound word of Mamai and Tsua, which means birth-giving daddy. Not father, but it's the word for daddy. It's a very strange word, and it's the highest and most powerful being in Dawa mythology, and it's the only being that is absolutely just and correct and good, and it's the being who made and created everything. And all the attributes of this Mamai Tsua match exactly up with the God of the Bible. And so the story goes that Mamai Tsua made everything in the beginning. He made the world, and he made two people. Isn't that interesting? And he made a tree. And he planted the tree in the world, and the two people. And the tree, there was a rope hanging down from heaven that ended in that tree. And when the people wanted to connect with God, they would climb into the tree and then shimmy up the rope and be with God. And everything was good. At that time, there was no death or decay or sickness. There was always enough food. It was paradise. Well, one day, the two people did something wrong. And God was very angry, and he cut the rope. Mamai Tsua cut the rope. And from that day on, death entered the world, decay, anger, everything evil. And so the problem was that people could not reconnect to Mamai Tsua anymore because he was the one who cut the rope. That's what that meant. He's the only one who was able to restore that rope or to restore that relationship again. You couldn't restore it with magic, what they did with other spirits. So when we heard of that, we tried to tell that, you know, use that word Mamai Tsua and introduce Jesus as Mamai Tsua's son, and suddenly a whole world opened for them. And they, this is the way back to Mamai Tsua. And they were so ready to just accept that after we had made that connection, and it worked very well. Okay, here's the story that I wrote my wife. I got to finish. I went back to Papua New Guinea just for 6 weeks to helping them on translation in the Old Testament. And they were asking me and said, well, how are we going to print this? So we were talking about printing the Old Testament stuff that we translated. And by the way, they said, can you also print some more New Testaments for us? And I said, what do you mean? We still have tons of boxes sitting in our house in the village, and there's more at the center. I said, no, they're all sold out. And people are starting to copy them already and everything. And I said, what's going on? And they said, everything is sold out. The people are crazy about the New Testament. And little church groups and Bible studies have started in every hamlet and village. And it's absolutely amazing. And because they heard of what we had done, and they found out that from other Christians now that this book is the way to show them the way back to restore that relationship with Mamai Tsua. And it's gone so far, it's kind of funny, that they started hiding their Bibles because people start stealing them from each other. So I thought, I wrote back to my wife, I said, well, I think we better hurry up to get to the Ten Commandments, you know, you shall not steal. So, but that's where it is, and maybe that's where I'll finish for tonight. You can pray for the Dawa people. There's something great going on there. They're very, very simple in their faith. But God is doing a lot of great things and really glorifying his name over there in Papua New Guinea. So thanks for letting me share this.